And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of... Here we go, the first time I'm saying it, Star Wars Rebels. Oh. Yep, that's it. We did...
There you go.
I know, we wrapped up Clone Wars last week, we're completely done, we're now in Rebels content, welcome! Hi! But we're not covering episodes yet. As you've probably noticed the last few episodes, we've been covering post-Rebels content, and now we're... or post-Clone Wars content, and now we're getting into the pre-Rebels content. And we have a lot to cover tonight, so we can't really tangent. So, but right fast.
I'm going to be really curious to see how much of this you get through. Boy, oh boy.
I'm excited. We're covering two things that I'm very excited about. One of these is the one I've been wanting to cover, like, more than anything, and I'm super excited for it.
I hope you have a king-size drink next to you. Jeez.
I do. I have a king-size drink. I am ready to go. But right fast, hi, Chris.
Does Wawa?
Hi, Chris. I just wanted to say hi. You know, just say hi and say hi and yeah. All right. So, yeah, we're not going to tangent because we have a lot to cover. So I'm going to preface this with every preface that I've been doing so far. To state now at the beginning, we are only covering material currently tied to the current canon. There's so much in Legends, which is just, and the extended universe, which is just not mine and Chris's forte.
Not even close.
Nope. That we would be doing these wrap-up, post-Clone Wars, pre-Rebel things forever if we covered all of the stuff. So this is all the current canon material now. I've already did that, because we're done with the unfinished arcs. I haven't cleaned this up. If you want to learn more about the extended universe Rebels material, like in this time period, I do want to suggest two people. The Lore Master and Star Wars Explained on YouTube. They do a really good job of covering, like, extended universe stuff. And I've actually used some of their videos to help me make these episodes. And finally, this is important. We are talking spoilers for books. So, I'm going to be reading the plots of these books, and we are discussing them. And tonight's episodes, books that we're covering is the Ahsoka novel, and if it doesn't take me too long, Thrawn. Thrawn's my babe. And so, we're hoping to get to both tonight. If not, we are definitely covering Ahsoka, hoping to get to Thrawn, seeing how much we can get through. So there will be spoilers for these books if you want to read them. I actually really want to get to Thrawn because Ahsoka's fun and it's great and everything, but to me, like, Thrawn is actually one of the most important Rebels books. It's like the history of Lothal of, like, season 1 and 2 leading up to it. I'm actually currently listening to A New Dawn right now, and A New Dawn is Hera and Kanan meeting, and so far with these two main characters of Rebels, Thrawn is giving me more Rebel stuff than A New Dawn is. Though it is funny, because I'm listening to the audiobook, so there's actually parts in it when Kanan's around Hera, he's just like, oh, Hera! It's her! She's so pretty!
Oh my god. So today, I found... you might have noticed I sent you a link for the Tarkovsky... Clone Wars cartoon.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay. I thought that you said...
Wait till you hear Anakin's voice.
Oh, yay!
It's shocking. Obi-Wan's close, but Anakin is more like squeaky. It's more like Patrick Delmore. It's great.
Yeah. I can't wait to see those.
He's like a whole octave higher than he is in the Clone Wars CGI cartoons.
But yeah, I mean, like, it's really fun listening to A New Dawn, because Kanan was a dog. He constantly, like, mentally talks about, like, all the women. He was like, well, the Jedi had this rule about no attachments. That was the first thing I let go of. And he's like banging.
Oh, I'd be attaching myself left and right if I, yeah.
Yeah, he's like banging girls all across the galaxy. He's like three continents Watson, which is a Sherlock Holmes thing. But yeah, it's fun because like when he meets Kara, he's just like, oh, she's so pretty, Kara. Oh, she's beautiful. She talked to me.
I wonder if they set that all up as a red herring that he might be like Rey's dad or something.
You know, if going into the book, like, because I knew it was Kanan, like, there was, like, this moment, it's like, because in actuality, Kanan Jarrus was actually the better one, Caleb Doom. And I was like, huh, I knew that. It's fun, though. I'm halfway through the audiobook right now, so I'm hoping I can finish it before we cover A New Dawn on here. That is my goal.
So, right.
I'm trying to hold off on A New Dawn as much as I can on pre-Rebels content because I want to finish the book. And it's been so good so far. It's been really good. I've been listening to it at work, so. But we're not there yet. Tonight, we're going to talk Ahsoka. Are you ready?
I am ready.
And I actually wrote down what episode number it was, Chris, because we haven't been doing that the last few weeks.
Oh, I figure it out eventually.
I know. So, ready?
I am ready.
Ahsoka is a young adult novel released October 11, 2016. The novel, written by E.K. Johnston, centers around Ahsoka Tano in the period of time after she left the Jedi Order and before she became an operative in the Rebellion. The title's audiobook edition was narrated by Ashley Eckstein, the voice of Tano. Series producer Dave Filoni said there is much more of her long history to be told, including parts that were never seen that will never be seen on screen. A novel gives fans an opportunity to learn more about her. Author E.K. Johnston said that it was a tremendous opportunity and a dream come true to write for Ahsoka and flesh out more of her story. And some extra information for you. Ahsoka in the novel takes on the name Ashla while hiding on the moon of Rada. Ashla is a word that's been used a lot in both Star Wars, Extended Universe, and current canon. In canon, the Lasat word for the Force, Ashla is the Lasat word for the Force as we saw in Rebels. A word for the light side of the Force is used by Bindu in Rebels. And Ashla is also a Jedi. She's a Jedi youngling during the waiting years of the Jedi Order. Appearing in Episode 2, she is a Togruden youngling, the same species as Ahsoka. It was actually a fan theory that Ashla and Ahsoka were the same person, but Leland Chi of Lucasfilms dismissed this by saying their ages are different. And also in Legends, Ashla is a moon of Tython, and also the light side of the Force, known in ancient times as Ashla, and was thought to be a living being at times. So yeah. Okay, I'm gonna take a drink. Alright. Let's talk some Ahsoka Tano novels. Here we go. Remember, spoilers. Alright, in the prologue. During the Siege of Mandalore, the former Padawan Ahsoka Tano led the Grand Army of the Republic's assault against Darth Maul's forces. Following a lightsaber duel, she manages to trap Maul inside a ray shield. He taunts her, calling her Lady Tano, as he did in Rebels, and how she's not a Jedi anymore. In the present of the actual book, a year after the establishment of the Galactic Empire, Ahsoka is hiding on the planet the Beska. Adopting a new pseudonym, Ashla, she finds refuge and work with the Fardy clan, a powerful and wealthy local family involved in smuggling. On the first Empire Day, the Fardy nieces. These nieces are like four.
You heard about Nisa's party, yes?
Like four in this book.
Fardy Fardy had a party. All the kids were there. Rudy Tooty led a beauty. All went out for air, they did.
I'm just gonna.
Go on.
I'm just gonna see how long you go for. the Fardy. I knew it was coming. Come to Ahsoka's house to inform her that there are Imperial officers in town who want to meet all the new people. Eager to stay out of the Empire's eye, Ahsoka tells the girls that she'll be at the Fardy house later. and prepares to... Oh my god, you're going to do this the entire time. And prepares to leave the planet. She gathers her few belongings and heads for the spaceport, setting her blaster to explode in order to lure the stormtroopers on duty away from the ships. Ahsoka takes one of the farties. freighters, mentally apologizing for the theft. Ahsoka flees to the outer rim moon of Rada, a remote farming settlement. Posing as a mechanic, Ahsoka befriends a local girl named Kaden. Ahsoka settles in the abandoned home of a woman who moved out after getting married. Her first job with Kaden is to repair a damaged thresher. After chatting with Kaden, she agrees to work for Kaden in return of ration packs. While adjusting to her new life on Rada, Ahsoka reminisces about R2-D2 and having to hide her force powers. Kaden talks about the Togruta newcomer to her 14-year-old sister, Miara, the farmer Tabola, and their crew leader, Varden. At Varden's suggestion, they decide to invite Ahsoka to Celda's cantina. Okay, side note, Celda is a really cool character. He's actually one of my favorite characters of the books. He has a cybernetic arm and leg, and he also lost one of his Leku. And I should say, by Leku, he's also a Togruden, like Ahsoka. And they have, like, cool Togruden bro moments where they're like, yeah, we're Togruden. What's up, babe? And he's a bar owner, and he's, like, the bar owner who knows everything about everything in town. And he sort of figures out that there's more about Ahsoka, but doesn't ever really press her about it. And he also gives her info and stuff like that. So Celda is a really cool cat, and I like him. Despite some hesitance, Ahsoka meets Kaden at Celda's and befriends her farming crew, including Varden, a woman, Malat, and the twins Hoban and Neera. Ahsoka learns that Kaden and Miara lost their parents in the accident, the same accident where Celda lost his arm and leg, and were taken in by Varden. When Kaden asks about her background, Ahsoka claims that she is an orphan, which is not a lie, actually. She has probably no idea who her parents are. The manager, Celda, takes interest in Ahsoka and asks if she is a refugee from the Clone Wars. Ahsoka remains nonchalant about her past. Meanwhile, the Imperial bureaucrat, Jeneth Pilar, looks over intel about exploiting Rada's resources. He debates the best way to bleed the planet dry. After returning home, Ahsoka gets to work repairing Tabola's thresher. She reflects on her experiences during the Jedi Purge, which coincide with her duel with Maul. When the clone troopers... Oh my god, I remember this part. When the clone troopers, with the exception of her friend Rex, who had already taken out his chips because Fives died for him to be saved, Rex, turned on her, Ahsoka was forced to flee with Rex into hiding. Amidst the chaos, Maul escaped. Probably went on to form the Crimson Dawn. After falsifying their deaths and digging a false grave where they took another clone trooper and shoved him in there and said it was Rex, with Ahsoka leaving her lightsabers there to sell the deception, the two agree to split up and head to the Outer Rim. Ahsoka also wonders about the fate of her former master Anakin Skywalker. She can't sense Anakin in the Force anymore, because now he's Vader, so he's a different person now, and she assumes that he is dead. As time passes, Ahsoka becomes the village's mechanic and develops a rapport with Kaden and Miara. I keep wanting to call her Mira, but her name is Miara, so if I accidentally said Mira, I'm actually talking about Miara. She also explores the nearby hills and caves, which she identifies as potential hiding place in the event of trouble. While meditating in nearby caves, Ahsoka senses the arrival of an Imperial Star Destroyer, signifying that the Empire has come to Rada. After panicking that the Empire has found her, Ahsoka decides to stay calm. Later at Celda's canteen, she and the local farming crew talk about the new Imperial presence, believing they have come to explore the moon's agriculture. Ahsoka learns to play the game Krokin and witnesses an Imperial officer and stormtrooper visit the canteen. And this was actually a really cool bit that was carried throughout the entirety of the book. So they use the game Krokin to develop secret signals. So it's like a table game where there's these pegs and they're trying to hit discs at certain pegs and they bounce off it. So they use signals within the game to discuss stealthy movements of the Empire and their own possible actions. So it looks like they're playing, but they're like, I'm going to move this here. And that means let's move things here. It's actually a really cool point of the book. So what'd you think of part one? Other than farties.
It's very adult. It's very young adult novel.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Super heavy on important story points that are going to really affect canon. But It just sort of is like the characters doing things and meeting people, you know?
Like, really the biggest chunk of this that's actually kind of important is, like, the Siege of Mandalore stuff and Ahsoka not being able to fill Anakin in the Force.
It definitely has a young adult novel feel to it for the storyline. Not that that's a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a fast read. I think I read it in, like, 3 days.
I kind of like it better because it's more like episodes of a TV show than feeling like it has to be some important story canon thing. You know what I mean? It's more of an entertainment.
Now, I do remember that this was, like, really important, though, because, like, before we knew we were getting season 7 and, like, Dave Filoni sitting down at, like, well, at Celebration, when he was doing the Ahsoka Untold Stories panel and was revealing a lot of the stuff that we've covered in the last few episodes about, like, untold Ahsoka stories, this was the big one. And he's like, this is actually where this book was revealed. They're like, we're writing an Ahsoka novel. And they revealed the cover and stuff like that. And so this was actually our first look at the Siege of Mandalore. It was the first, like, canon-like thing of, like, this is how it happened. Because it had been mentioned before, of course, and stuff like that. And it had been mentioned in Rebels and, like, how Maul, like, because Maul and Ahsoka knew each other, but nobody knew how they knew each other in Rebels because they had never met in Clone Wars. So, like, I remember when Twilight of the Apprentice came out, everybody was like, how do Maul and Ahsoka know each other? And come to find out, it was the Siege of Mandalore. She took him on. That's what, like, the really cool part of this section was it was our first time actually seeing something of the Siege of Mandalore.
Right.
Oh my god, I just remember reading that scene where, like, Rex and Ahsoka are just looking down at the body of a random clone and burying him, and she has to, like, leave her lightsabers, and he's like, be careful, and she's like, you too, and then they left, and I cried. And they made a gravestone like, here is Captain Rex, the murderer of Ahsoka Tano. Here's her really, lightsabers.
Just Joe Clone.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. It just... Oh, my feelings. I like, even now when I think about that scene, it makes my chest hurt. But that's all I really have for part one.
Hey, me too.
Yeah. This.
I got nothing.
All right. Part 2. When the stormtroopers visit her place the following day, Ahsoka uses the Jedi mind trick to convince them not to reassign her on grounds that her work is important to food production. Later, she goes to the local spaceport and manages to retrieve her starship after some haggling with an Imperial officer. After hiding her ship in the nearby hills and caves, she meets with the farming friends at the canteen. Ahsoka learns that Malat and her husband are moving to take up work on the planet Celeste. Ahsoka claims that her ship was stolen. She also learns that from Kaden that the Imperials have added 2 hours to every shift. She and the farmers then witness the ill-tempered Tabola get in a fight with the Imperial officers. Ahsoka and the others watch in horror as the officers execute Tabola right in the middle of the canteen. After the Imperials have left, Ahsoka advises Kaden and her other farmers to resist the Empire by slowing crop productions. 2 weeks later, the slow crop productions lead the Empire to increase the work shifts without increasing food rations or breaks. Ahsoka spends her day smuggling food, medical supplies, and water recyclers to the caves. She learns from Varden that the new Imperial crops leach the soil, devastating Rata. Ahsoka briefs the farmers about her plans to smuggle supplies into the caves and starts a resistance movement. Meanwhile, Jeneth Pilar, the leader who brought the Empire here, reflects on his posting on Rata, regarding the moon as backwater. Pretty much Jeneth is just, like, spends half the book just sitting in his office going, this place sucks. It's boring. I can't wait to be done with this. I hope I get a promotion. Like, that's really what he does the entire time.
That sounds about the right for anybody in some sort of foreign military base. Out. Backwater military base.
Yeah, I mean, that's really who he is. He's like, how can I bleed this place dry to get out of here faster? That's his entire plot. Kaden, Hoban, and Miara debate whether or not to support Ashla's plans. Later, Ahsoka reflects on her reason for leaving the Farty family. She saved several of the younger Farties. including the 4-year-old Yoda, Hidala. Calling to their deaths with her force powers. She later discovered that Hidala herself was force sensitive. To avoid arousing the Empire's attention, she decided to flee the Beskab. While Ashla is away, Kaiden and Miara talk about the Togruta off-worlders' plan to start up a resistance movement. Miara is assembling explosives. Later, Ashla's returns with supplies. For the next 2 days, Miara assembles explosives while Ahsoka and Kaiden set up a door for the cave. 4 days later, Barden tells Ahsoka that 8 crews, roughly 40 farmers, are prepared to support her plan. Later, Ahsoka leads the team consisting of Miara, Neera, and the Rodian Colvin in planting corrosive charges at the Imperial walkers at the local spaceport. When Ahsoka discovers that Miara has real explosives in her bag, she confronts the younger girl and asks if she is planning her own operation without her. Miara admits that Ahsoka that Varden has sent Kaiden and Hoban on an unauthorized mission to target the administrative building. Ahsoka orders them to return home. When Miara refuses to abandon her older sister, Ahsoka changes her mind and tells Miara and Neera to bring the charges. As they approach the Imperial Administration Building, the first of Kaiden's bombs explode. From Neera, she learns that Hoban split the group into 3 for each of the doors of the Imperial Building. The insurgents are also armed with blasters. Ahsoka and Neera head for the Imperial tanks and attempt to disable them. Soon she finds Kaiden and her unit, who are pinned down by Imperial fighter. Hoban is killed, throwing himself at Imperial blasters. They are soon surrounded by stormtroopers, whose lieutenant orders his men to execute his prisoners. However, Ahsoka uses the Force powers to crush the Imperial blasters. Ahsoka and the Radans take their opportunity to flee. Kaiden is angrily confronts Ahsoka about her secret with the Force. Following the attack, the Imperial bureaucrat Jeneth Pilar ponders the loss of the Imperial walkers. Taking interest in the presence of the Jedi, he taps into his datapad. Pretty much he's just like, cool, a Jedi promotion, let me call people. Back in the cave, the Radian insurgents sedate the grief-stricken Neera. Ahsoka reveals her true identity to Kaiden and Miara. Kaiden is angry that she did not reveal her true identity earlier, since she could have helped save Hoban. After resting, Ahsoka is haunted by the face of Hidala Fardy.
Oh!
4!
Fardy.
Ahsoka later learns from Miara that Kaiden has run off into town. She tells Miara to stay behind while she follows Kaiden. Meanwhile, Kaiden is arrested by stormtroopers outside of Varden's home. In Imperial captivity, Kaiden is interrogated and tortured by Imperial interrogators. While Kaiden is facing the death penalty, the Imperial commander offers to give her a merciful death if she can reveal where her friends are hiding and the identity of the Jedi. Kaiden remains defiant despite sustaining a broken arm. Ahsoka manages to infiltrate the Imperial prison and rescue her. Using her Force powers, Ahsoka manages to carry Kaiden out of a high window. After escaping, Kaiden counsels Ahsoka to take her to her ship and flee off-world since the Imperial commanders want to kill her. Ahsoka promises to return to Rada and leaves. You know what this actually reminds me a lot of? The Saul Guerrera arc.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
Like,
yeah.
Ahsoka, like, teaching people how to be insurgents when they're not insurgents.
Yeah, except in this one, Saul's the one that gets killed. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, that's really what, like, as I was reading this, what a lot of this reminds me of. Because, like, these guys are farmers. They're not... Like, the thing about, like, Miara and Kaiden knowing how to build explosives is they're, like, mechanics, too, in a way. Like, they just help prepare machinery, but they're not, like, a mechanic like Ahsoka. They just know how to do little things. And they're like, yeah, we build these things for fun. And Ahsoka was like, oh, my God, that's a bomb. What the hell, child? You're 14. But yeah, it reminds me so much of the Saw Gerrera arc. And you know Ahsoka couldn't stay away from helping people. It's Ahsoka.
Oh, there wouldn't be a book if she wasn't helping people. She wouldn't be the character, you know, her character's not going to be able to do that without seriously messing up her character. So yeah.
And this really is like kind of the big turning point, because like, I'm not sure when exactly this is set in the 20-year period from Clone Wars to the original trilogy. I don't know when exactly it's set, but I think it's still on the younger side of Ahsoka, probably about halfway through.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, I get the feeling that Ahsoka's just been running, and, like, I like this moment where she's like, you know what? I'm not gonna run anymore. I'm gonna teach these people how to fight, because that
I'm gonna
was...
hang it, yep. I mean, just because you're a Jedi doesn't mean you can't do the right thing anymore.
Yeah. So, and, like, she has... Though I do like the... I am happy that, like, the townspeople get mad when they find out she's a Jedi, and they're like, why didn't you use your powers sooner?
Yeah, they just have to think, you know, just think that through, and it's pretty obvious, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's all I have for part two. All
right, part three, then?
Yes, let me get a sip of my water.
Yeah, keep drinking that water.
Yeah.
You're just starting.
Yeah. All right, part three. In a flashback passage, Anakin Skywalker reflects on his past while on a battlefield of Christophsis during the Clone Wars, a.k.a. the Clone Wars movie, watching a shuttle fly in that, unbeknownst to him, is carrying Ahsoka Tano into his life. Tear, I cry. Back in the present, Senator Bail Organa of the Alderaan Sector studies a report about the events of the recent events on Rada. He takes interest in the report of Jedi activity. His adopted daughter, Leia Organa, is in the same room, and she's, like, three, and she's adorable. Well, I don't know how old she is. She's little. She's not, like, I don't know. I don't remember how old Leia is, but she's a child, and she's just like, oh my god, fishies! Mesmerized by the fish in his aquarium. After deleting the report for security reasons, Bail contacts Captain Ramus Antilles to get back R2-D2 for a sensitive mission. He then spends time with Leia, hoping she won't show any hints of her real father's Force talents. Elsewhere, the Inquisitor known as the Sixth Brother is on Thebeska searching for a reported Force sensitive when he's called to deal with the Jedi presence on Rada. So the thing about the Sixth Brother, we'll actually be talking a little bit more about him probably next week, whenever we get to the current Darth Vader series. This was his first appearance. And the first time we ever actually saw him physically is in the current Darth Vader series, as Vader is training up the Inquisitors and stuff like that. And the thing that's interesting about the Sixth Brother is, no one knows what his species is. He's a brand new species. He wears a mask, so we can't even really see his face. All we know is that he's this gray creature that, like, walks on two legs and stuff like that. So he's kind of a cool guy. But we don't really know a lot about his species, so he's a brand new species, and he's really cool, but he's in the Darth Vader comics, so we'll talk about more about that in either next week or the following week, so. But
now, when you say brand new species, does that mean one that we haven't seen before, or are people in the Star Wars galaxy going like, what is this
guy?
No,
it's a new species before. For fans, because he, like,
okay.
Isn't in Legends, and they only describe him in this as a gray creature. And so when we first see him in the Darth Vader series, he's not a known species.
Okay.
So, yeah. So he leaves the Beskel, where the Farty clan is. I was waiting for it, okay. And he is...
Ha 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 ha!
There it is. And then he goes to Rada to look for a Jedi. After traveling through seven Outer Rim worlds, Ahsoka decides to return to the Farties. Her secondary motivation is to check on the Force-sensitive Hidala. Upon returning to Thebeska, she is greeted by the Elder Farty, who tells her that there is always room for a good mechanic at his home. Upon entering the Farty home...
It must... smell it must in there.
Hidala tells Ahsoka that she has... that she sensed there was a shadow while she was away. Ahsoka spends time with the older Farty sisters, Mikala and Chenna, who ask about her travels. Ahsoka tells them that she found it difficult to go into hiding because as a Togruta, she sticks out. 5 days later, Ahsoka asks Hidala about the shadow. The shadow is the Inquisitor that was looking for her. The little girl likens it to a dark stone with burning rays and recalls that it disappeared one day. Ahsoka advises Hidala to stay out of the shadow's way and to remain hidden. Ahsoka believes that the shadow is a dark side creature, recalling rumors of a dark lord serving the Emperor. So I actually find that really cool that, like, Vader, is like a rumor at this point. Like, he hasn't been seen enough to where, like, there's just talks of, like, a Dark Lord serving the Emperor, but, it, like, people don't, like, know his name yet. So I like that. Ahsoka decides to remain in the Farty household until it's safe for her to leave. There it is. A week later, Farty hires Ahsoka as a pilot. I don't know why you're laughing, by the way. Is it because it's so close to fart? As a fart joke? That why? Okay. She finds herself traveling to other cities on the Beska and making off-world trips. During that time, Ahsoka also sees more of the Empire's oppression. During an off-world cargo trip, Ahsoka picks up several human passengers from an escape pod. The woman tells them that their shuttle was under attack by pirates who took several prisoners, and that they barely managed to escape. The woman tells Ahsoka that her business was underbid by a well-known firm from a large Imperial project, aka the Death Star. While they were reworking the numbers to see if they could match the lower bid, they were attacked. Ahsoka agrees to help get back the woman's people and travel to the coordinates. For once, Ahsoka feels good being a hero again. Meanwhile, the sixth brother arrives on Rada, only to learn that Ahsoka has fled off-world. He decides to leave Rada to get the Jedi's attention. On Alderaan, Senator Organa hires pilots Taig and Tasmin to find Ahsoka and rendezvous with him later. Later, Ahsoka returns to the Farty household on Tabesca. The Farties have been visited by several stormtroopers. The Farty elder vouches for Ahsoka and claims that she is his mechanic. Hidala reassures Ahsoka that she did not sense any shadows today. When the Imperials search her room, they find scraps of metal but deem them harmless. This is actually an important thing. Throughout the story, Ahsoka kept going, like, just picking up random scraps of metal, and, like, she had a sense that she needed them, but she didn't know why. She just started collecting, like, metal scraps. Following the Imperial search, Farty apologizes to Ashla for the Empire pinning their activities on her. I'm giving you a chance to do your laugh, Farty. Okay. He tells Ahsoka that he is aware that she has been using his ships for mercy missions. To avoid further trouble from the Imperials, Farty advises Ahsoka to leave. She also tells Farty that his niece Hidala is special and to keep an eye on her. Before leaving, Ahsoka bids farewell to Hidala. After departing the Farty household on her ship, Ahsoka travels to a remote world. She lands her ship, but is soon followed by the starship belonging to the agent of Black Sun. On Tatooine, the fugitive Obi-Wan Kenobi meditates in the Force. He is haunted by memories of his past, including Anakin's betrayal, until the Force spirit of Qui-Gon Jinn counsels him to let him go of his attachments. Yeah, there's a lot of sides in this. I'm just like, cool, it's Obi-Wan's here. But it literally adds nothing else to the story. It's just like, hey, Obi-Wan.
What's this up? A sidebar?
Yeah, it's like a three-page thing of like, and Obi-Wan's on Tatooine being sad. Because, like, some of these make sense. Like, the Anakin flashback about how he met Ahsoka. It's, like, cool. But in this, it's like, Obi-Wan is sad. Anyway. After traveling off-world to investigate the sightings of the Jedi fugitive, the sixth brother returns to Rada. In order to lure Ahsoka out of hiding, he decides to hunt down her friend Kaiden. Meanwhile, in the hills of Rada, Kaiden and her sister Miara are hiding in the caves. They sense an approaching figure and decide to retreat deeper into the caves. Elsewhere, the Imperial bureaucrat Jeneth Pilar makes preparations to pact, since the harvest is approaching. Meanwhile, Ahsoka rebuffs the Black Sun agents and attempts to recruit her and flees on her fighter. The Black Sun agent pursues her in a ship. A third and larger ship arrives and attacks the Black Sun vessel. Ahsoka then tries to flee into hyperspace, but is caught in a tractor beam of the third vessel. And back on Rada, Kaiden, Miara, and the others hide from the sixth brother. The Inquisitor manages to force Kaiden out of hiding by threatening to kill her companions. Also, I forgot to note, he's using the Force to, like, crush the caves. So he's, like, bringing the caves down on them. And he's just like, you better come out or I'm gonna kill you all! Miara attempts to follow her sister, but Nira stuns her with Kaiden's consent. When she surrenders, the sixth brother went back on his promise and kills many of her fellow farmers with his double-bladed spinning lightsaber. Colvin and Nira are killed, but her sister Miara survives. The sixth brother then takes Kaiden prisoner. What'd you think of part three?
A little more violent.
Yeah! Something I like seeing other Force-sensitive people who are not Jedi, who are just kind of like, cool. Like Hidal is just kind of there, and like the Inquisitors, we know that the Inquisitors are looking for children. Right. Especially like new children and stuff like that. So I do like this idea of like people being aware that their kids are like special, and like when an Inquisitor shows up, it's just like shit. And the other cool thing about this, actually, at the time that this book came out, we only knew of three Inquisitors. The brother, the seventh sister, and the Grand Inquisitor from Rebels. We didn't know about any other Inquisitors. So, like, this was, well, because, was Twilight of the Apprentice out yet? Yeah, so we knew about we knew about four Inquisitors, the one that was also in Twilight of the Apprentice. So this is kind of cool, like, shading in, like, more of the Inquisitors, because people are like, oh my god, there's another one! What is this hierarchy? Why are they numbered? So. Chris?
I'm still here.
You just don't have anything to add?
Not really. I don't know, yeah, I don't really know what to say.
Yeah, well, he's crushing people with cave, so you must think it's cool.
That is cool.
Alright, well, part four then.
It's all just sort of adventure stuff, but it's not, nothing in this one really was like...
Character stuff?
Adding to the greater story.
I know. So, part four. Ahsoka's... Yeah. Ahsoka's freighter is drawn into the hold of Tage's ship. Tage and Tasman greet her, but Ahsoka knocks them out, believing them to be hostile. Remember, these are Organa's men. She soon encounters R2-D2 aboard Tage's ships. Oh my god, and it's so sweet because she's like knocking them out, and she turns, and there's R2, and she's just like, R2! R2! She like hugs him. She's like, I missed you so much, R2! It's actually a really cute scene because she's just like, you look amazing! I love you, R2! She's like so happy to see him again. Well, I get that way. If I ever saw R2 in real life, I'd be like, oh my god! And she...
Oh yeah, just for the first time, not mention after you've missed him.
Yeah, I mean, she hasn't seen him, what, like, since she's left the Order? I mean, she might have saw him in the Siege of Mandalore, but we don't know yet, so...
Right.
And she convinces her old friend to release the tractor beam on her ship to escape. She also gets R2 to transmit the coordinates of the ship he's traveling in. After receiving Tage's report, Senator Organa travels to the coordinates in his ship. He rendezvous with Tage's ship and picks up R2, reuniting him with C-3PO. Upon studying the security footage from Tage's ship, he discovers a single frame showing Ahsoka's Montrell is visible above the crates, and jubilantly identifies her as the Jedi he is after. Entering his office, Bail then discovers that Ahsoka has smuggled herself aboard the Tantive IV, as he turns on the light to discover her sitting at his desk, wearing a spacesuit. She tells a bemused Organa that R2 opened the hatch for her as soon as he got on board of the Tantive IV. Ahsoka has hidden her ship in one of the asteroids in the system. Ahsoka tells Organa that she did not come with Tage because she does not trust someone who employs a tractor beam before a hello. Bail informs Ahsoka that he is forming a rebellion and is recruiting people to fight against the Empire. Ahsoka is haunted by memories of the Clone Wars, but Bail reassures her that she can join forces with him. Bail agrees to help her protect Force-sensitive children before assigning her a new mission. Because that was a big thing, like, Bail was like, hey, join my club, and Ahsoka's like, I want to protect Force-sensitive kids, which is something we actually see in Rebels, that she helped, like, Kanan and Ezra save some children, too, and something that happened in Clone Wars, because Palpatine was trying to take children in Clone Wars. So this is a good running through line of Ahsoka, like, she definitely likes taking care of kids. Senator Organa briefs Ahsoka about the sixth brother on Rada. After meditating in the Force and recalling her experiences as a youngling forging her lightsaber on Ilum, Ahsoka tells Organa about her plan. In an interlude chapter, kyber crystals are shown growing in the ice planet of Ilum. It is revealed that dark side crystals are made by using the Force to bleed them red. The Galactic Empire sends ships to plunder Ilum, breaking open its ice mountains so lava is pouring out of the out of it for its kyber crystals. However, other crystals grow where the wilderness grow in the wilderness untouched by the Empire. And I do want to note that it's a very prominent fan theory that Ilum is Starkiller Base in The Force Awakens. But that's not canon. It's just a very prominent fan theory because it's kind of like in the Outer Regions and only Jedi know how to get there. And the First Order came from the Outer Regions and Starkiller Base was like powered by like massive kyber crystals within the planet. So it's a very prominent theory. Anyway, following the briefing, Ahsoka travels to Rada on her freighter, turning down Organa's offer to provide backup. When Ahsoka tells Organa that she is not a Jedi anymore, he tells her that she sounds and acts like one. On the way to Rada, Ahsoka visits Ilum and discovers that the Empire has carved up great chunks of the planet for some unknown purpose, being the Death Star. Or possibly Starkiller Base. Returning to Rada, she lands her ship on the opposite side of the moon from the main town. Ahsoka heads back to the caves and encounters a distraught Miara. Miara tells her that the others were killed and that Kaiden was taken prisoner by a gray creature. Miara agrees to help Ahsoka rescue her sister by acting as a lookout. Ahsoka discovers that the Empire's has over-harvesting has ruined Rada's fields. Ahsoka sends Miara to Celda with news of the impending rescue while she heads to town towards the Imperial compound. In the main street, Ahsoka encounters the Sixth Brother. Following a verbal exchange, Ahsoka engages in a lightsaber duel with the Inquisitor. During the fight, he has the lightsaber, she doesn't. She's using the Force. During the fight, the Inquisitor tries to intimidate Ahsoka by activating the spinning mode of his lightsaber. However, Ahsoka cracks the cylinder hilt with a touch of her hand, causing it to explode. The Sixth Brother is killed in the explosion. She retrieves the kyber crystals, the two that are in his saber, from her fallen foe. After meditating in the Force, she succeeds in turning them back to their natural color, the brightest white. These crystals are used to forge her new white lightsabers with the scraps of metal she has been picking up randomly throughout the book. She didn't know why she gathered these pieces of metal throughout the story, but now she knew, and she makes her new lightsabers with them. Ahsoka then fights her way into the Imperial compound and manages to rescue Kaiden from her cell. She and Kaiden held Celda's cantina, where they reunite with Miara and Celda. Ahsoka tells her friends of her plan to evacuate the town. As they evacuate the population, Organa's A-Wings assault the Imperial compound. Pretty much Organa was like, "You don't want me to come as backup? Fuck that! Go, guys!" Shooting down several Imperial fighters, and it's actually good that Organa did that because they needed a way off the planet. Two A-Wings are shot down, one pilot manages to escape, and the other one killed in the crash. Bail sends three ships, including the Tantive IV, and they begin evacuating the village. Three Imperial tanks bombard the evacuees. Armed with her twin lightsabers, Ahsoka slices through one of the tanks, causing it to explode and overturn a nearby tank with the Force. Ahsoka heads towards the third tank, but is too late to stop from wounding Varden. She uses the Force to rip the tank turret apart. It's awesome, she's just like, "Rah!" Ahsoka picks up the wounded Varden and carries him aboard the Tantive IV. On board, Ahsoka reunites with Kaiden and promises that they will meet again. What did you think of part four?
This one's more like one of the adult novels, I think. As it gets going, it sounds more like it's starting to get more like one of the regular Star Wars novels.
Yeah. There's a lot of things I like with Ahsoka and Bail. I kind of wish they had more time together because, he's recruiting her into the rebellion, and it's just, I just like Bail Organa too, so whenever I see him, I'm just like, "Oh, it's Bail Organa, he's gonna die in 10 years.
At least it's quick.
Yeah, but I do also like her fight with the Inquisitor, because he had his big spinny helicopter lightsaber, and she just fought him with the Force. And, like, she looks at his lightsaber as it's spinning. She's like, "I'm gonna break it there!" And, like, she literally, like, just pushes and touches the lightsaber with a Force and explodes. Which I find just, like, so... Which we kind of see in Rebels a little bit. Like, if you cut one of their lightsabers in the middle, they, like, fall apart. Which makes me, like, kind of wonder why they're using such flimsy shit. But these guys aren't real Jedis. They're, like,
people... Right, right. They're just goofing around. Yeah.
We do know that some of the Inquisitors used to be Jedis, so they know how to make proper lightsabers, but some of them, these people are people who were brought up as dark side people, so they're not even really, like, fully versed in, like, how to make proper lightsabers, which I think is really interesting. Because why would Palpatine do that?
Right, exactly. Maul did okay.
Well, yeah, but Maul was properly trained in the dark side.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do just like the cool moment of, like, after she's had this big fight, the Empire's around, and, like, Ahsoka still just, like, sits down, and, like, they describe it as healing the Kyber crystal. Like, she heals them, and that's why they turn white. And it's just a really cool moment when she makes her new lightsabers with, like, these bits of metal. Like, it seems so, like mundane throughout the book, where she's just like, I'm gonna take these metal scraps with me. I don't know why, but I am. And it comes to fruition, like, oh, I have these so I can make lightsabers. It's a really cool moment of, like, the Force kind of guiding her to that point.
And I like and we found this out in Clone Wars, that I like that people just sort of make their lightsabers out of what they want to.
Mm-hmm. Like Gunji having the wooden hilt one?
Yeah.
Oh, those kids are probably dead now. That's probably true, actually. I think it was Henry Gilroy, and somebody asked him a question about whether or not the younglings from the youngling arc survived, and he was like, probably not. They're probably dead, and everyone was like, aww.
That's an easier answer, too, to answer. No.
But that's all I have for part 4.
All right. Part 5?
Part 5. You ready? This one's really short, because, yeah. Though, because there's a part in this I was just like, Following the evacuation of Rada, Ahsoka smuggles her way aboard the Tantive III to talk to Organa. I like that she just smuggles herself places. Like, she could just walk up to Bail Organa, but she's like, no, I must smuggle myself into the ship. I love Ahsoka. Before she enters his office, she overhears him talking with his daughter, Leia, telling her to tell her mother he'll see them both soon. Organa won't be surprised by a Jedi break in twice and invites Ahsoka inside. She asks the senator if he's showing his vulnerabilities to put her at ease, and he tells her that the whole galaxy knows that he's a family man, and that the Empire is counting on it, as they think it means Organa will be more amenable to certain suggestions. Ahsoka asks Organa if he worries about his daughter, and he replies that Leia is already a lot like her mother. Ahsoka thinks that Organa might be trying to test her, but she doesn't know the answer and lets it pass. Ahsoka doesn't realize that he's talking about Leia being Padme's daughter. The two discuss the recent events on Rada, including Captain Antilles' report that they have only sustained 15 casualties, including one A-Wing pilot and 14 evacuees. Varden survived his injuries due to treatment from Antilles' medical staff. Senator Organa, by the way, this is not Wedge Antilles, there's Antilles is apparently a name like Smith.
It's like Smith.
Yeah, in Star Wars. So this is not Wedge Antilles, it's a different Antilles. Senator Organa offers to settle the Raden refugees, who number in a few hundred, on Alderaan, and I cry because if they're still there, they're going to have a bad run-in with the Death Star. Ahsoka tells Organa that the refugees want to help the rebellion. So Organa, thank God, agrees to send them to a different planet where they can grow food for the rebels. Ahsoka shows Organa her newly acquired lightsabers and explains how she healed their kyber crystals. She points out what happened on Rada, and with Tasman and Tag, shows that the rebels need better channels of communications, and offers to help with that. Senator Organa inducts Ahsoka into the rebellion, and she tells him to call her Fulcrum.
There you go.
Elsewhere, the Grand Inquisitor surveys the charred fields of Rada. After inspecting Ahsoka's work, he sets a course back to base and tells his crew to inform Darth Vader they have found evidence of another Jedi survivor. The end.
Yeah.
Ahsoka was so close to talking to Leia, and she doesn't even know that that's Anakin's daughter! Like, he was, like, Skyping her, and she was listening, and, like, she was listening to, like, Leia talk to Bail, and she doesn't even know that that's Anakin's daughter! Sorry, I have feelings about that. I often like to imagine, like, well, one, now that we know that Ahsoka survives past Endor, like, her meeting Luke and Leia, and I've also imagined, like, Rex meeting Luke and Leia, because we know that Rex was at the Battle of Endor, and him right. being like, oh, I knew your parents, and they're just both like, you knew our parents! Like, I think about that a lot.
Yeah, but Rex doesn't know he knows their parents.
I mean, I think he would connect the name Luke Skywalker. Skywalker. Because Skywalker is not in Dilly's. It's not a Smith name, apparently, yeah. In Star Wars. But I think about that a lot, like Ahsoka and Rex talking with Luke and Leia and just being the cool aunt and uncle that they never had.
I guess Luke could be a cousin or something, you know? He doesn't have to be from that Skywalker.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's such a rare name in Star Wars. I feel like there'd be a part of Rex being like, Skywalker? That's That was Anakin's name. And he's just like, Anakin, that's my dad!
Yeah. There would have to be some sort of conversation like that, yeah.
I think about that so much. So we got the beginning of Fulcrum. And just a side note, while Ahsoka starts it, Cassian Andor from Rogue One is also a Fulcrum agent.
And soon to be a TV show.
Oh my god, I know! Chris, you don't even know!
It's a little flawed because you know...
No, you don't know, like, I was sitting and I was working, and I was, like, writing on some stuff, and my dad was in the next room, and he just suddenly hears me screaming, like, screaming wildly, and he just runs in and throws open the door, and he's just like, are you okay? And I'm like, they're being here for my days! And he's like, I don't know what that means, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine, they're making a series with Cassian Andor from Rogue One, and we're gonna get it? And he's like, this is a Star Wars thing, isn't it? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, okay. He left. And I was like, bye. And then I called Megan. And I was like, Megan, they're making a Rogue One series. Call me back. Because I had to leave her a message. She was at work. And I was like, Megan. And then, like, my Bodhi Rook cosplayer, Jan, that I've become buds with, I'm like, tweeting her. And I'm like, Rogue One series. And she's like, fuck, I know. So, yeah, I have feelings about this new Cassian Andor series. Because, oh,
yeah, it's gonna be a spy show, it's probably, I would imagine.
Oh, and we know that Cassian was a murderer, we saw it in Rogue One, so I have a feeling what it's starting to kind of look like between the Cassian series and The Mandalorian is, like, these live-action TV shows are probably going to be, like, the darker side of Star Wars, which...
They could be throwback genre ones. One could be, like, a World War... Like, just like Rogue One, like a World War II story. And the other one could be a Western, from the way they're sounding, you know? Which I would be down for both of those.
Mm-hmm. So, oh my god. I'm so excited. So, yeah. That's the Ahsoka novel. What'd you think?
It was pretty good.
Pretty good, the whole summary, the Cliff Notes version of it. I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, you know how I am about the books. Yeah. I can't take them seriously. I don't know if it's me or what, but, like, it's like, oh, okay. That happened in it. Well, okay. And I know sometimes it actually affects, like, the real story, but the way they do it, too, is also to make, you know... They make sure that you don't have to read the books, so I think that's part of what enables me to be like, yeah, okay.
Well, what we're about to talk about actually kind of, in a way, does affect the story.
Well, I mean, no, they can affect the story, but it's like, it's in a way that, you know, it's almost like retroactively, you know, you don't have to know that happened in the book. To see it, you know? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, alright. So, that's it for Ahsoka. We have decided, because I know in the beginning of the episode we were saying, like, oh, we'll do Ahsoka and maybe Thrawn? We decided to save Thrawn till next week, because he's my boyfriend, and I love him, and he's my blue husbando, and we are looking at the outline, and it's right now 29 pages, and all of the Ahsoka novel was 8, and the rest of it, of the 29 pages, is Thrawn. So we're like, let's do that next week.
Yes.
And we're like, you know what we haven't done in the last few episodes? Listener feedback. So, as always, if you want to leave us feedback, you can leave it on Twitter, iTunes, or the Two True Freaks Facebook page. On Twitter, it's @JGuysAndJedi. And on Facebook, It's going to be under the Two True Freaks Cantina. I usually have this written down, but now I'm doing it from memory. And on iTunes, that's really cool, because if you leave us a review on iTunes and rate and review the show, it helps people find the show. So if you like us, leave us a review on iTunes.
And we'll read your review.
Huh?
And we'll read your review.
So we are actually wrapping up the end of Season 6. So all the feedback that we had from where we left off to the end of Season 6. So take it away, Chris. I'm going to sit back and eat my chocolate bar.
Yeah, get a break for once. The last three episodes. All right, so, okay, we'll go for the first episode we're looking at is The Disappeared Part 1. And all we got is feedback for Part 1. We didn't get any Disappeared Part 2 feedback. So this is all from The Disappeared Part 1. And it's all from Paul C. Kelly. And Paul C. Kelly said, "We have made it to the Jar Jar Windu duo. Oh, yeah. Yes, we did. We went to wet blanket and wet skin Jar Jar." All right. Paul C. Kelly says, "This episode affirms Yoda is a bit more wise than Windu, watching their conversations about the Dagoyans. Windu senses the dark side and starts distrust, where Yoda seems to understand the Dagoyans are just not trusting Jedi from their history classes, telling them that Jedi are bad. That's because they are." "Of course, Yoda should be being around 800 years old. Imagine if we had been alive for 800 years.
We I read that book. It's called Blood and Gold by Anne Rice."
Yeah, right. We would have been an Anne Rice novel. "We would have lived through the Middle Ages and seen the bubonic plague."
That's actually one of my favorite parts of the book, where Marius wakes up after, like, going through all this artwork, and he walks outside, and it's the Dark Ages and the bubonic plague, and he's like, "I'm going to go back to sleep for a
while. Go back to bed."
He sleeps for another 100 years, and he's like, "Oh, the Renaissance, thank God."
Well, he says, "We would have seen the bubonic plague, but that's if we happened to be in Europe." Yeah, you know what? I would probably skip out of there, too. "But imagine what someone would really be like if they lived that long." Yeah, they'd probably be an insufferable prick just thinking about it. "Also, dark side powers are much cooler in appearance." Yes, they are. "Force lightning and green glowing dark magic. Seeing both Mace and Jar Jar together was pretty humorous, I thought." Yeah, I agree.
I agree, too.
It was actually, it was actually refreshingly less humorous than it could have been, than they could have made it, which was what made it good, I think. And the humor wasn't the same as you. The humor was, a lot of it was about...
A lot of it was just Mace. For me, it was just Mace, like, slowly staring at Jar Jar.
Yeah, well, it was Mace underestimating Jar Jar, and Jar Jar sort of slapping him in the nose a little bit, which was kind of funny. All right, the next one comes from The Lost One, and it's from Patrick Delmore, and he says, "Another story I thought would never be followed up on." Yeah, you and me both, man.
Yeah, with Sifo Dyas.
I never thought we'd find out about Sifo Dyas, we didn't even find out about Sifo Dyas, but he was there. Sort of followed up on, but not explained or given too much more information. To me, the most important thing is, okay, Sifo Dyas wasn't Sidious. I just assumed it was Sidious using a close to... Because everybody, when they change their name, they always change it to something at least with the same first letter. Or just like Ahsoka in the last book, I guess ostensibly so, like, if somebody calls their name that it sounds close enough to their real name that they automatically will react to it. All right, the next one is... is from the episode Voices. And the first one's Patrick Delmore again. I can't wait to hear Chris's thoughts on. I'm guessing negative for this, but positive for the rest of the arc.
Oh, see, that was the one we were tied on. We're like, Chris is either going to hate this or love this.
I liked it, right? I didn't hate this one.
I remember.
I wonder why he guessed I guess negative because it's sort of like the Mortis arc, but it's not really. It's
Mortis, but good.
It's more the way I would have liked the Mortis arc to be. So yeah, it's a positive. And Paul C. Kelly says, yeah, I forgot this one has a slow start. It gets really good after this one. I agree. And then Hope says, it only took almost...
Hey, where's my voice?
It only took almost 3 years to get to the end of Clone Wars, LOL. Winky face, smiley face.
Poop emoji.
And then Patrick Delmore says, it was you and Chris who got me to watch the show in the first place.
Yay!
Awesome.
Patrick Delmore was on our roundtable to wrap up Clone Wars.
Yeah. So I guess he liked it. I guess we did good. Okay, now we're getting near the end. We're on Destiny, and we've got... Ooh, we got one from Gene Hendricks.
Woo! Gene, the podcast machine! Gene!
This is one of my favorite ones lately. Gene says, I may be off base here, but I think that Dooku, as a Jedi, was a lot like Mordo was in the Doctor Strange movie. He was very straight-laced, by the book Jedi, who trained diligently and was happy in the Order. Like Mordo, though, there came a day when Yoda or another high-ranking master threw out the rules that Dooku had been clinging to. Once he saw that betrayal of everything he held dear, he left the Order where, while searching for new meaning, he met up with Palpatine and then became a Sith Lord. And I said to that, and I still say to that, I like that theory.
Chris Honeywell said, I like that theory!
I'm going to run with that one. I liked it, because we were talking about it. We were talking about our theories in the show, but I like this one better. I think this is about right.
Yeah, and I also just wanted to give you a funny voice of, I like that theory!
Wow, I like that theory.
I like that theory. It's a damn good theory. Get the bar and the Dooku's.
And then Hope said, dude, I could totally see that. That's a great comparison. Although you should have added question marks on it to really do the dude, I could totally see that. That's a great comparison. All right. So then Paul C. Kelly chimes in. Yoda got to have a Zelda 2 Adventures of Link fighting your dark shadow experience. I have no idea what that means because I've never played a Zelda game.
I am a Zelda fan, and I do watch a lot of Game Grumps.
My roommate would know, too. She's played all the Zelda games. In the 8-bit NES... Oh, he's going to explain it to me. Okay. In the 8-bit NES game, Link has to fight his own shadow.
And he does so to an Ocarina of Time.
I thought I noticed Anakin sort of give a suspicious look when Yoda started going against the kind Dooku illusion. Not sure if it was hinting towards anything. I'm sure it was a little hint into the future. I did like seeing Yoda getting stumped for a few minutes, but he needs a bigger challenge. Oh, yeah. Off to the dark planet. Oh, yeah. It was great. Yeah. It was great seeing this again, knowing the discussion of Mortis, having seen The Last Jedi's discussion of the Force in Rebels episode where Ezra has to go to the ancient temple. I will hold off on saying what happens there. I sort of got it more watching this than the first time.
I kind of like how you're just like, the discussion of Mortis.
Look, choke on the words. Mortis. Mortis. I spit on the Mortis. It's a dirty, ugly show. Okay, on to the last episode, Sacrifice.
Stop it, you're making Patrick Delmore cry.
That's what I do. Okay, so we got one from Paul C. Kelly on Sacrifice, the last episode of Season 6. This was a great episode for the Halloween season. Oh, yeah. It's like Yoda and Freddy Krueger's Nightmare Land. Oh, no. Oh, my. Only thing I would take out is the exact image of Anakin about to kill Dooku. That was too much reminding me of the last episode of the Mortis arc. It was, but it wasn't as on the nose.
It wasn't. We didn't see Vader's mask.
Right, right. I believe these arcs are all based on or trying to develop further Luke's encounter in the cave on Dagobah, but that encounter did not flash any sort of exact images of the future for Luke. That's because they didn't know. Well, it did, though. It did. It certainly did. It had Luke inside of Darth Vader's mask, which is... it was also saying, like, you could become evil, but I think that was also, little spoiler as to maybe his lineage. Those types of force encounters should show more like something symbolic, like Luke sees how his own face in Vader's. That was more symbolic, but it was of the future. But yeah, they can go on the nose with this one because all that stuff is already met. Well, I think you're right where they shouldn't go on the nose, but I think they did because all that stuff is finished now, so they can draw from that. Whereas when they made Empire, you know, they knew what that was going to be revealed later on in Empire, so they could allude to it, but they didn't have anything after, you know, there wasn't the whole world built that they could do allusions to as many other movies and stuff. They only had one other movie in the Christmas special at that point.
And just so you know, Chris is about to say the word Bane. He's talking about Darth Bane, not Cad Bane, sadly.
Ah. Okay. I thought Bane, I'll just say, I thought Darth Bane was strictly from Knights of the Old Republic, but sounds like he was already canon. Oh, yeah. Cool. Still, if this solidifies him as canon, we have made the end for now. Cannot wait for the release of Season 7. Oh my god, how great is Season 7 gonna be?
I can't wait. I'm so excited, and like, Disney's gonna get my money. I've already decided I'm gonna buy the stupid Disney streaming service.
I almost wish that I'd watched all of Clone Wars earlier, so that I could be like, I've been waiting years for Season 7, but no, I just wrapped up Season 6 just recently. Like, for real, that was my first viewing of Season 6. So it's almost like waiting for a regular season to come to start it. It's weird.
Yeah, but at least now we have at least Resistance to hold us over.
When was the last, what year was Season 6? It was like, 2014, 2012?
I think it's 2014, I think. I don't have it in front of me, but I think.
It was somewhere between 2012, 2014, something like that.
I mean, I think it's 2014. Let's see. Sacrifice Clone Wars.
Well, I want to say Disney bought it in 2013.
It was, yeah, 2014 is when Clone Wars ended.
Okay.
But, yeah, we did another book, and we're having my Blue Husbando time next week. Oh, I'm so excited. I can't wait to talk about my Blue Husband. And next week's going to be fun, you guys, because I can't remember if I was talking about it when we were recording, but to me, like, the Thrawn novel is the best look at, like, the lead-up to Rebels. I know I've been saying if you don't want spoilers, don't listen to these, but I suggest listening to next week, because I take my time going beat by beat going, this is how it ties into Rebels here.
I just realized I have to get a hold of Gene, the podcasting machine, and get the new promo for this, or the new opener for this episode.
For this episode,
have to make a new opener, yeah.
We talk about every episode of Star Wars Rebels now.
Yeah. It'll be the same opener, I'll just change a few words, but...
You have to make it really obvious, like...
Oh, yeah.
Like... It's 2014, and it's the end of the Clone War.
I'm going to do it like a Mad Libs. Yeah, I'll just change all the data into something, you know.
When we have stories of Mandalorians, Rebels, and...
Maybe I'll just have Gene, like, I'll just have Gene record a few words, and I'll just harshly dub them over the...
I'm actually looking forward to a new opening.
Stories of Mandalorian. Or maybe I'll just do the voice. It'll be like, no, stories of Mandalorians.
Rebels.
And Rebels.
And Jedi. And Blue Husbandos. So, yeah, I actually am really looking forward to having a new opening. So, well, that's it for this week. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our amazing website full of podcasts. All the Two True Freaks podcasts are there, from soup to nuts. whatever the hell that means. Because I would like to go through all our podcasts and I'll decide and I'll put them in two categories, which ones are soups and which ones are nuts. But tons and tons of podcasts there. And you can go there to subscribe to our RSS feed. You can subscribe from iTunes. And you can go to Facebook if you want to find out what shows are coming out. That's Two True Freaks at Facebook. And we got the Two True Freaks Cantina where we just go to talk shit. And we've got even the more popular than Facebook. I know I'm just an old person who uses Facebook. But we've got a young, spry youth on the Twitter tip, and that is Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene! I don't know. I start running out of ways to do that.
I was just like, oh, geez, I lost hope. And, that's pretty much what we got going on the interwebs. Where can they find you, Hope?
You know, I was just thinking about it, like, when you get Jane to record our new opening, you should just get him one time to do, da-da-da-da-da-da, me! And just, like, stick it in just, like, one random episode when people aren't expecting it.
I know, yeah.
And just, like, save that one for a sunny, like, a rainy day. Alright,
well, I would like to have just a drop-in of da-da-da-da-da-da, me.
I know, but do it a couple different ways so we can just kind of, like, pepper them throughout Rebels.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's like 10 that people are not expecting, and they're all just different ways. Anyway. Alright, well, you can find me at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account, and you can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. You can also find... I don't have this written in front of me. What do I do in real life? I also write Thrawn fanfiction. I am a fanfiction writer on Archive of Our Own. My main story is Forces of Gravity. I actually just put up a brand new chapter today, like 20 minutes before I called you. And in the new chapter, Thrawn, Cad Bane, and my character Kaya make a final stand against a group of pirates. I also recently wrote a story called, it's part of my series, 14,000 Things to Be Happy About, which is just a series of flash fictions. And I'm using the book 14,000 Things to Be Happy About, which is just a list of 14,000 random things. And it's so good as, like, writing prompts, because it's just a book of 14,000 random things. And I found one called The 10 Most Beautiful Words. Chimes, dawn, golden, hush, lullaby, luminous, melody, mist, murmuring, and tranquil. And so I wrote 10 flash fanfictions in one fic. So Chimes is Hera and Kanan, dawn is Ahsoka. Actually, it's set after the Ahsoka novel, after she meets with Bail, and it's her contemplating whether or not she can actually be a spy. So that's actually timely for this. Golden is Bodhi, Rook, and Galen Erso. Hush is Han and Leia. Lullaby is Sabine and Captain Rex. Luminous is Jyn Erso and Cassian Andor. Melody is Zeb and Callus. Mist is Obi-Wan and Anakin. Murmuring is Ezra Bridger. And Tranquil is Luke Skywalker. So that's the other one I've written recently. So those are just some of my fan fictions. I actually liked that one a lot. I also write at geekygirlexperience.com. That's my website. And I actually just posted an article this week about characters I would love to see come up in Star Wars Resistance.
I saw that. I read that.
How, really? Did you like it?
I did.
Yeah. Yay. I'm glad you liked it. But yeah, my character lists from everything from Ezra and Thrawn to Kix the Last Stormtrooper to Rey Sloane. To even, like, my wishful thinkings of, like, Finn before he's left the First Order, so, like, we actually see the First Order from his point of view, and my very, very long wishes of Cad Bane and Hondo that will never show up in the show, but that's fine.
Right, right.
So I just wrote that over at KikiGirlExperience.com, that's my website. If you like what I do, you can click on the Ko-fi link and buy me a coffee.
It's funny because I went over to read it to see it. I'm like, okay, let's see if she... I'm like thinking, I've only got one character that I want to see.
Oh, who do you want to see?
And I can't remember who it was, but I went over... you know, when I was thinking about it, when I read it, I'm like, ooh, I want to see this character. I wonder if they'll show, if Hope pick that character too. I have to go back over and look at it because it was definitely in there.
I'm glad I wrote the thing that you don't remember.
I know. Well, you caught me by surprise. If I went back and read the article before it, you know, I forgot all about it. If I read it again, I would remember.
Do you want me to read out the characters right past you?
Yes.
All right, so these are the characters I want to see in Star Wars Resistance, and you can read the reasoning behind it on geekygirlexperience.com. So there's Ezra Bridger and Thrawn, Ahsoka Tano and Sabine Wren, Rey Sloan, Kick-Salas Clone Trooper, Luke Skywalker and the Knights of Ren.
There, that's the one right there. Luke Skywalker.
Finn, before or after he left the First Order, Jason and Hera Syndulla, Eli Vanto and the Chiss, and Hondo and Cad Bane.
Yeah, no, I would love to see Hondo and Cad Bane too. All those other characters, yeah, it would be cool. I would really love if we got a little bit of an idea of Luke Skywalker and maybe not the Knights of Ren, but you know, the people who would be his students that would become the Knights of Ren, you know.
I did talk about how like Luke is the far shot, but the Knights of Ren are possible.
How what?
Sorry, I just shoved chocolate in my mouth. I did talk about how Luke is like a long shot. Like I don't actually think we'll see Luke.
See, I don't know if it's that much of a long shot because he's supposed to be in episode 9, and I mean that means he's going to be out and about around Disney and doing publicity. Why not? And if he's going to be in episode 9, why not keep him in the public eye? You know what? You know? And I mean,
the context of the story, I mean, it takes place 6 months before the new trilogy. So, like, he's already in exile and his academy is destroyed.
Oh.
And then we're going into the Force Awakens timeline. Like, the show has already been, said that.
Then we're not going to see Luke Skywalker. I'm thinking it might have been, like, during the Knights of Ren time period. Never mind.
But I think we could see the Knights of Ren, though. Because they actually recently name-checked Kylo Ren in a recent episode.
Right.
And so,
Well, they sort of did to Kylo Ren what they did with Grievous in the Tarkovsky Star Wars, Clone Wars, you know, where it was just like, he was this, rumored thing that people were hearing about. Sort of like when you were just talking about when Vader first started showing up, where people were just like, oh, there's this guy Darth Vader, you know. The reputation of these evil guys, like, precedes him. It's better to do that, too. It's better to have them have a little bit of legend behind them before they show up.
Yeah, so, I liked that. So, I would like to see, like, the only way they could do Luke is if it's either in a flashback to his academy, which I would love, because I do want to see his academy. I could see them doing a flashback. Or him somehow being a Force ghost, because like Last Jedi takes place like hours after Force Awakens, if they're going into the Force Awakens timeline, I'm assuming they're going past the Force Awakens timeline or the past the Last Jedi timeline because those hours with
there's not long to go, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm assuming they're going into when I hear we're going into Force Awakens timeline, I'm assuming we're going into Last Jedi timeline too. So
into just basically that whole era.
Yeah, so, I mean, Luke could be a Force ghost. It's possible. I just don't think we're going to be getting...
I don't see anybody there that Luke would have a connection to enough to Force ghost. You know what I mean?
I know that they have somebody voicing Leia. I don't think they're going to be using Leia that much. I'm actually really surprised how much they're using Phasma and Poe, to be really honest with you.
No, they're using them right about where I would imagine them to be, where they're just sort of, walk-ons, and Phasma is just sort of a hologram, you know? But, you know, yeah, they give her some good lines, and they give her a nice little intimidating turn.
I'm assuming you haven't seen the newest episode that came out yesterday yet.
No, I have not.
You're like, I'm just gonna tell you now, like, Poe's in the episode. He's in, like...
He's a character, like, he's actually,
I was imagining they would use Poe and Phasma like Vader and Rebels, where he's like in the opening and the finale. That's it. So I'm actually really surprised how much they're using them, because it's not what I was expecting. Which is not
I
not
could see Oscar Isaacs being like, hey man, I'll do whatever, you know? I can see him being into it to the point of where, like, sort of like Samuel L. Jackson, where he's just like, yeah, I'll, you can put me in the show. You know, I'm not too big an actor. I'll be in Star Wars.
Samuel L. Jackson only did the Clone Wars movie. He didn't do the...
Right, right. But, you know, I mean, just saying, you know, he's game to do some... They might have been like, ah, we don't want to... You know, Samuel L. Jackson probably would have done the Clone Wars TV show, but they probably just couldn't afford it. But he probably would have done it, for sure.
But I'm really enjoying Resistance. It's a lot, actually. It's building so well on itself. Like, things are jokes in, like, episode 2, like, Kaz falling down a mail chute. He actually uses the mail chutes as a way to escape this last episode. And not the one that came out yesterday.
The one before it, yeah. The last one I saw.
Yeah, so I'm like, I like that they're building on it already, and it's only like 7 episodes in or something.
I agree with Aaron Henley, made a comment in the last couple days where he's just like, yeah, I'm enjoying all the characters except Kaz is a little too green at this point. And it's like,
Kaz is learning, though. Like, he's learning.
He is, but he's still doing the same mistakes over and over again. It's getting frustrating to me, but, you know, I'm willing to wait and let him develop and let life catch up with him. But yeah.
But go watch Resistance, guys. Well, we'll eventually get there on our show.
Yep. Few years from now, we'll be doing Resistance.
Yep. Well, that's all I have. Do you have anything else, Chris?
I do not.
All right. Well, guys, come next week for me. I'm going to be fangirling for 2 hours. I'm just going to be fucking fangirling over my husband and my Space Watson and my Blue Husbando.
It's all Thrawn all the time next week, so get ready.
It is. And I'm very excited for it because I really do stand by, like, it's probably the book that, like, the most has background stuff that I know of so far for Rebels, because it's very detailed, and I love it.
We've thrown out all the other stories for this one.
Oh, yeah.
And Hope isn't thrown in the towel.
Yeah. I'm going to need that towel. I'm going to need that towel tonight when I go to bed. All right, bye, guys.
Bye.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at 2TrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, 2 True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the 2 True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at 2TrueFreaks.com. 2 True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S.
You can email 2TrueFreaks directly at 2TrueFreaks@gmail.com.
2TrueFreaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search 2 True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find 2 True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for 2 True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about 2 True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Two True Freaks has been brought to you today by Damanzo Core of Milan, Italy, and by the letters F and U.